From recruiting and consulting firm Riderflex, I'm your host, Steve Urban. And here is your Riderflex podcast episode of the day. Eric Matisic on the Riderflex podcast. How you doing, Eric?
I'm doing awesome. Steve, thanks so much for having me. This is going to be great.
Oh, it's an honor for me, too. I mean, hey, I mean, you're pretty famous in the Denver area, so I like having celebrities on the show.
Are you sure you got the right Eric? I don't know that one.
No, you've done so much. But, you know, before we get into some of the professional life, though, real quick for the listeners, for those that don't know you, just a little background, where you grew up, maybe some early family life, some early school, you know, stuff like that.
Absolutely. Well, I'm 100% Coloradan. From the moment that I was born till today, I've never had an address outside the state.
Nice.
I call Denver my birthplace. I grew up in the Western Slope in Fruta, Colorado. And I came back to Denver to go to the University of Denver, and have been here building tech companies and businesses, community organizations in the startup and innovation ecosystem since 1999. And so love Colorado, bleed Colorado, do everything I possibly can to make sure that Colorado is just nothing but the awesome place it is for all of us to live, work, play, and raise our families.
Besides work, do you have any hobbies that you do in your free time? Like where would I find Eric if he wasn't working?
Well, growing up in Colorado, we obviously have a gluttony of spoils to be able to really get out there. And I lived in a place that was about 30 minutes from any of the activities that Colorado is famous for. So whether it was rock climbing, mountain biking, skiing, rafting, cliff jumping, you name it, Grand Junction in the Grand Valley, had access to all that. And so, I love just to get out there in Colorado. It's hard for me to classify my favorites. I've got young kids, and so I try to spend time, exposing them to the awesomeness of our great state. If I need to take a little bit of break, you can always find me, hunting down some ripples in a nice flowing Colorado stream. I'm an avid fly fisherman, and I like the quiet time on the river.
Very good. You got kids? How old are your kids?
My kids are young. I've got, three kids all under the age of 10. I say that, every area of my life is a startup, and the only foundation I have that's rock solid is my marriage. Everything else is, high growth, learning and iterating and making it work.
Three little kids at home during COVID and schools being closed and stuff. I felt sorry for people. Folks that have like teenagers and stuff like that, maybe a little easier to manage, but boy, whew, small ones. Okay. It's been busy at your house the last few months.
Yeah. We keep it alive. And, I think we've had incredible, incredible teachers. I think one of the blessings about, I just heard so many stories across my friends in Colorado, but, the teachers and educators in our schools have just done such a terrific job. One, adapting to the teaching style, two, adapting to the health risk, and three, just generally trying to be amazing humans to get our kids, educated up. And so I feel like I've been, spoiled with that. They've definitely enjoyed the mix of being at home and now starting to get back in class in kind of a modified fashion. It's been great too.
Buddy of mine told me the other day, he said, "Damn, I didn't realize how dumb I was until I had to actually look at some of the work they're doing."
Yeah, I can often be stumped by fourth grade math, so I feel that every too and ever so often.
Absolutely. Okay, so regarding your professional life, now weren't you like a sales guy early on before you jumped into being an entrepreneur? I mean, it looked like you had a little early sales biz dev, but right away, an entrepreneur pretty fast after that. I guess my question is, did you have this entrepreneurial bug way back in college? Did you know you were going to be a startup kind of entrepreneurial guy?
Yeah, I'm one of those rare ones that, I can remember being entrepreneurial as long as I can remember growing up. I was a kid that had the stereotypical lemonade stand. I quickly graduated into building golf ball traps and hunting down golf balls and selling them, you know, kind of okay. in my 9, 10, 11 year old ages near a golf course we lived near growing up. I then graduated into baseball cards and, you know, built a baseball card empire as I went into high school. And then in high school, just, you know, worked my tail off doing odd jobs and running lawn companies and all sorts of stuff. So I always had this orientation towards, you know, entrepreneurship. In college, you know, I was blessed. I showed up at the University of Denver, realized there were kind of, kind of two types of students there. Those that were on scholarship and those that were blessed that they didn't have to need as much scholarship. I happened to be in the former, not the latter. I had a stack of t-shirts on my desk and said, man, who makes those? And so I built a t-shirt company my fourth day of school, my freshman year, that ultimately ended up paying for a big chunk, almost all my college debt, and graduated from DU without any student debt from a business that I built, you know, printing t-shirts and, you know, selling sweatshirts and that I ran kind of all 4 years while I was at DU.
How about that? Congratulations, graduating with no debt and going in, no scholarships. That's pretty big accomplishment. Congrats. So before we get into High Wing, tell me, do you want to talk about the Commons or Denver startup? I mean, just give the, I don't know how much you want to go into some of the other stuff you're doing or that you have started. I know the, you know, we're going to talk about High Wing a lot, but you've done so much. Do you want to just give the viewers, quick overview on the Commons and Denver Startup Week?
Sure. Happy to do that. You know, I would even back up a little bit. I mean, I think, you know, your business is so exciting and the work that you're doing, you know, specifically in the cannabis industry, like it's an incredible reflection of Colorado truly being the epicenter of innovation and progress in commerce and in business. And, you know, I just feel like we're in this really special time that, you know, whether it's your industry, you know, whether it's security, whether it's aerospace, whether it's ag tech, whether it's software, we've got an aerospace company that's building the first supersonic aircraft that's been seen since the Concorde, Boom Aerospace. Like Colorado's just like this beacon of awesomeness with broad breadth innovation. And so, you know, over the course of my time here, you know, I've been, helping build companies since 1999 here in Denver. And when I've not been doing that during the day, I've been working to help the community and connect entrepreneurs and connect capital to great ideas here in our city during that same period of time. So, you know, we were really blessed kind of, you know, when we think about coming out of a great recession that we all experienced, you know, the real estate apocalypse in 2009 and 10, 11, that was caused by the mortgage banking crisis. Right. When we came out of that, you know, Colorado was incredibly resilient. And I don't think people remember that because we had oil and gas and because we had technology and because we had, tourism, like we fared pretty well. But at that time we did mark a time that we thought, you know, the tech community really needs to be escalated. And so, you know, with Brad Feld's leadership and now our attorney general, who used to be the executive director of the Silicon Flatirons Law School, you know, program in law school at CU, Phil Weiser, you know, they had recognized and were asked by, you know, a program that was affiliated with the Obama administration to really jumpstart our tech communities. It was called the Startup America Partnership. And so, you know, I think always being involved in some of the work that's been happening in the community in 2011, we really turned it up. And, with a group of folks over some beers at the Wing Coop, we launched our first Denver Startup Week in 2012. And really with the vision just to celebrate entrepreneurship with a program built for entrepreneurs, by entrepreneurs, for the future of entrepreneurs in Denver. I think that's become kind of a staple of the community. Much less doing of mine than the awesomeness of the entrepreneurs that are on stage every year telling their story, telling their how they did it, like why Denver is great for that, you know, the skills they've acquired and the talent and the help they've got here to build their businesses. Denver Startup Week is just truly a story of our community and our innovation every year. And it's just awesome to see the founders and all the attendees just, you know, brag about how awesome that the city is, but more importantly, that it's just a great place to build companies. So that's been really fun to watch. And, you know, pre-pandemic, we hit our all-time high, you know, 20,000, you know, people attended in 2019. In, you know, obviously in 2020, we had our largest virtual conference in the history of the event. our first and only largest fully virtual conference with almost 10,000 attendees that showed up last year, 100% virtual. So that's been fun. Commons on Champa was really built to become the Denver Startup Week year round. So Denver Startup Week, 7 days. Tammy Dorr, who's an incredible leader who leads the Downtown Denver Partnership. She's one of the co-founders of Denver Startup Week. She was actively working with the mayor and the mayor's team, and I was leading the College Technology Association at the time. And we had this discussion one afternoon of like, what if this awesome thing just started could be not just a day but 365 days a year? What would it look like? What would a physical space look like? And her and I co-founded the Commons on Champa at 1245 Champa Street, really in partnership with the City of Denver, the College Technology Association, partnership with the vision of making a place for underrepresented entrepreneurs to have access to resources. And when you fast forward, this will be our seventh year. It's been amazing to see the impact. I mean, we have thousands of entrepreneurs that go through there a year. We try to keep all of our services at low cost or no cost, and we want that just to be a springboard and connected platform for all the resources entrepreneurs in the city for all walks of life to build companies. Whether you're building a burrito company or a high growth software business, you should be able to walk into the Commons, understand where you can, get forms of finance, forms of mentorship, the ability to work with peers on formulating your idea, pitch competitions. Like, the intent is like, we want to provide a platform to, when people say, how can I do it? We can answer the question with, let me show you. And so it's been a gift to the community. And again, purely stood up by hundreds and hundreds of entrepreneurs and incredible sponsors that have made it possible.
Congratulations on both. Does your wife ever look at you and say no when you come up with another idea or something else you want to be part of? I'm looking at your, you're trying to be involved with the Commons, Denver Startup Week. You're the CEO of High Wing. You're on a bunch of boards and volunteer stuff, including the Goodwood Club, with Taylor Kirkpatrick and a bunch of other guys. I'm just like, how the hell does this guy find time to even breathe? And then you told me you had three little kids at home.
I think I had a poster that my mom gave me when I was seven that's been hanging either in my bedroom or my bathroom my entire life and still hangs there today. And it's there's a poster that, had 21 rules of success. And, whether subliminally or whether intentionally, the number one rule on that list is that, number one, marry the right person. It determines 90% of your success and happiness. And, there's nothing more true than that in my marriage. I mean, I think incredible marriages are those that, meet each other and understand each other, with where they stand. But always guide each other and support each other with where they want to go. And, I'm blessed that, I've got a wife that understands entrepreneurship. She understands ambition. She understands generosity. And she has an incredible giving heart herself. And so I think we both spend a lot of time just trying to figure out how we can help our friends, help our community, help raise our kids. I mean, there's not a lot of moments in the day that I don't think we want to just figure out how we can give back and give back more. And, She's special, and wouldn't be able to do any of this stuff without being able to have such an amazing partner.
Nice call out, my friend. You're out of the doghouse for a long time now. You can screw up for a few weeks after that speech. Nice job. Super special. Nice of you to call her out like that. Seriously. Okay. So tell me. So give me the High Wing. Let's start off with the 3-minute elevator pitch for everybody that needs to know what you guys do. Just give it to us, High Wing, and then I'll ask you a bunch of questions. Go for it.
Absolutely. So High Wing is the first open data platform for commercial insurance. In simple terms, we're building a transaction system to connect brokers and carriers to efficiently digitally transact insurance policies. Okay. Today, when we look at the world of if you own a business, and especially a large one, your entire transaction of your insurance relationship is predominantly over email. We recognized that back in 2017 that the $800 billion policies were trading like they were in 1995. And so an incredible group of engineers here in Denver and now even nationally have partnered up to, you know, really drive and build a platform that really, you know, speeds up the process of acquiring complex insurance. And most importantly, starts to really digitize the overall trade between the brokers and carriers that actually transact it.
Okay, very good. It's highwing.io for the listeners, by the way. How big is the company right now, Eric, as far as, I don't know if you want to give us employee count or client count or, you know, however you measure it?
Yeah, today, you know, we just recently closed a recent seed round.
Nice.
And have some incredible investors and partners that joined us in the journey. In terms of the size of the business today, you know, we're 14 strong employees that you know, really are you know, predominantly engineering. I mean, you can imagine that when we're trying to connect a lot of different systems and move a lot of information to transact insurance, you know, we're overwhelmingly engineering and product led. But we do have some of us that do business and operations and make sure that the trains run and our clients are served.
But you're up and running. You're post revenue. You have clients. All the good stuff.
Yeah, we do. We work with you know, three of the top five commercial insurance carriers in the world. If you think about those who sponsor golf tournaments, we probably work with one or two or three of them.
Nice.
And then in the world of you know, kind of platform broker networks, you know, we cater to the middle market brokerage firms that understand that innovation is not only a strategy, but it's imperative for their development growth and in their ability to compete in the future. And so when you look at the top 100 brokerage firms in the United States, we cater to, you know, really broker number five to broker number 100, you know, kind of excluding the really big ones, you know, the Marsh, the Aon, the Willis, the Gallagher, the, you know, $25 to $50 billion enterprises.
Okay. Very good. So you said you just closed a round of funding. Now the original cash to get it started, was that IMA Financial? Was that you? Was that bootstrapped? Was that angel walk? I don't know how much you want to share.
Yeah, absolutely. No, IMA Financial, if you don't know it, as one of the leading financial services firms, you know, in Colorado, with original roots in Wichita, with offices in Kansas City and Dallas, and really just not only an insurance operation, but, you know, they sell personal line insurance, small commercial insurance, benefits, as well as a full wealth management operation, wholesale operation. So when you think about the world of insurance, you know, they're a diversified financial services company that really has the ability to cover all aspects of risk. Okay. They're led by probably one of the most incredible community leaders and business leaders in Colorado, a gentleman by the name of Rob Cohen, who I've had the gift of getting to know over the last, you know, decade and a half. First, you know, just by his heart for the community, every board of impact in the city, whether it's been Visit Denver, the Chamber, or Down Denver Partnership, he's been the chair of at some point in time. He's led the Olympic bid to put Colorado on the map globally, you know, working to host the Winter Olympics here in the state of Colorado. And he's just kind of been anywhere and everywhere trying to make this place an amazing place to live and mm-hmm. raise our families. Mm-hmm. So that's how we really got to know each other, was through that capacity. I've always admired him as a leader. I've admired him as an impact in the community. And we just got to know each other fairly well. And, you know, through that, I got to realize that he ran one of the most successful insurance businesses in the world. And I spent my career, you know, building software companies, always working for founders or being a founder of high growth businesses in the software space. And really, he and I just started talking about the revolution that was happening in insurance, kind of around the time that the word insurtech was being kind of, you know, put together. It's like, I think 2015, 2016, before that, insurtech wasn't even a term of art yet. And coming in and understanding that, Rob had really dabbled in some of the work in his own brokerage of trying to understand how data and information could accelerate the trade. And he said, let's really, you know, do this together. I've got some inklings of an idea. I know that data is going to revolutionize our business. I know that we've got a bunch of information that we're not fully utilizing, and, you know, let's work together to really solve that, you know, and build something that's industry changing. So I had a chance to work with Rob to formulate some of the initial underpinnings of the concept for Highwing, really leading off some of his vision he had for the industry after being in for 30 years. And we molded that some contemporary thinking around open data networks and the future of APIs and data interoperability and the power of multiple data sources. And we came up with Highway. And we took it out to our partners, our carriers and brokers and our insurance, and immediately just had some really great reception. So we knew we were onto something. And so it's truly a story of innovation within a large operating company, of working with a group of founders and entrepreneurs. My business partner and co-founder, Jay Jashin, is just an incredible founder in his own right here in our Denver community. He not only built Denver Startup Week, runs all the technology stuff that we've been able to work with together, but when we're not doing community work, you know, he's been the magic behind companies like Hello, which is one of the promising social networks that came out of our community backed by Techstars. He was one of the leading stars back with one of our legendary marketing and agency brand agency firms, a company called Factory Design Labs, and he's built his own agency in the technology space. And so, you know, Jay and I looked at it from a technology perspective, and it really leveraged off of IMA's work and Rob's initial thinking, and collectively came up with something we thought could really revolutionize the industry.
Gotcha. Okay, so two co-founders that also had a conversation with Rob, and IMA got involved early. That's what I heard you say.
Yeah, really started that. I mean, this is a story of innovation out of IMA with the ability to kind of bring together software leadership to, you know,
okay,
do something that's not native inside of insurance, which is built software. And gotcha. So the combination of those two things has been a really good platform for us to be successful.
And you just closed maybe what'd you call it, a seed round? So is that kind of where you're at? And what's the next phase with cash raise, or do you want to share any of that today?
Yeah, I mean, we in November, we were really blessed to bring together both a portfolio of strategic partners and great institutional partners and close on a $4 million seed round. It afforded us two things. We moved our operations out of IMA Financial Group. And so okay. We were a wholly owned subsidiary going into that transaction, coming out. IMA is still a majority shareholder, but we've got an incredible group of new shareholders in the business. On the institutional side, we're really lucky to work with the team at Springtime Capital, okay. Great venture firm, early stage, forward-thinking group, service provider capital, who's been in a lot of incredible deals here in the state, and they've been equally as awesome to work with. And then we work with Cameron Ventures and Rise of the Rest Seed Fund, which is a revolution fund out of Washington, D.C. to really round out our institutional side. But the real story, I think, outside of the great institutional partner we had is that we realized we needed to build this company with a portfolio of brokers and carriers that believed it was the right solution. And so the round was led by a firm named BrokerTech Ventures, which is a group of 13 incredible middle market brokers that are investing in innovation, as well as a publicly traded brokerage firm called Baldwin Risk Partners. And collectively, we're all in this together to really build a broker-facing solution for the industry, backed by institutional capital and driven by the strategy and alignment from a product perspective with our product partners.
Mm. For you as a CEO, do you enjoy the cash raise part of it? Or would you rather be involved in the day-to-day growth and activity of the business? Like, if you had to force rank them, what are your thoughts there?
I think the most important thing as a CEO is just the ability to adapt to the activities and the ever-changing activities with the job. Mm-hmm. Having been part of startup companies, you know, this being my fifth, you know, really from the ground up, you know, idea on a napkin phase to growing a business type experience, every single one's been a little bit different. But I think incredible CEOs have to be able to be adaptive to what the business is facing at that immediate chapter and be the best they can be in that arena. So when we're fundraising, I'm maniacal. I love the fundraising process. I love meeting new investors. I love meeting and talking about opportunities to build our business together. I love the process. I love the idea that we are really forging not just a bank account, cash coming to our company, but these are partners that we're going to work with for anywhere from the next 5 years to the next decade to build an industry-leading company. So I over-index on, the people side and the relationship side of fundraising, and I under-index on the capital. Like, capital is an outcome of building incredible relationships, in my opinion, as it relates to fundraising. So I love that chapter. I equally love that, now that we've been able to conclude that, You know, it allowed us to fully shift 100% of our energy back to building, you know, what the vision was, which is a world-class product in the category. I love understanding our clients' needs. I love working with our team to match, you know, the real solutions that, you know, are in our world, the desk level associated insurance brokerage to software. And that's an incredible, incredible feeling when you get that right. And so I just think, and as a CEO, making sure you've got, you know, capital in the bank to be able to be in the game per se, to be able to recruit the best talent, which you know so much about. I mean, startups are a human game. They're not a product game. They're not a market timing game. They're a human game. And so, you know, between capital and talent, and then, you know, the ability to execute against those things, I feel like that's really the job. You know, I try to hire and be part of hiring incredible leaders and stay out of the way as much as possible. If you get it right in the beginning, your job, both from management and from, you know, oversight, just becomes so much less because you spend so much more time getting the person right. Mm-hmm. And great people left to their own accord usually produce great results. And that's where I get really excited.
Nice. I couldn't have said it better on the people side. What's been the biggest challenge so far for the company, or, you know, the biggest hurdle so far?
You know, I think we're still in the early chapters of insurance innovation. So, but I mean, it sounds funny in 2021 to say that, like, you know, we're evolving the transaction, you know, platform from email to a digital, fully interactive, secure, encrypted, you know, multifunctional, you know, platform, right? That sounds like something that should have happened in the late 90s or early 2000s, like it did in financial services or healthcare. You know, insurance, because of the design, meaning that, you know, we've got a lot of really big companies that have built really large technology platforms to be successful. And I think just, you know, the business has not had that cataclysmic function to change. So it's like there hasn't been like that, you know, the house is burning down moment that if we don't change our technology platform, we're not going to be able to write insurance next year. Like, it's been in a cycle where if we're able to continue to do our work and we're able to continue to use our systems, we're able to bind policies and cover risk, and the world seems to work. And so I really think it took, you know, a lot of these, you know, new entrants on the bottom of the market to press up a lot of the innovation. And, you know, everyone's been thinking about innovation. I just think the cycle sometimes in insurance, you know, they typically can be because of the scales of these companies. You know, they're all, you know, especially the major players are all multi-billion dollar enterprises. Right. You're not turning things on a whim, you know, you're not, and in insurance, you're also not inventing product quickly. You know, things that are too good to be true, in insurance, they always are. And so you're not coming up with some fancy new trick, to cover, to beat the actuarial science that's lived on for 200 years, that's going to, you know, reinvent risk markets. And so, you know, I think it's a very stable industry. And, you know, I think when you have a really hungry, you know, energetic, fast moving team, aligning the tempo in the market is always something we talk about. Like,
good,
you know, like how do we align our tempo externally with the tempo internally so we can create great product, but also work with our clients to build something. And so that's been something we've learned how to do the last couple of years.
What's the long-term plan? Sell it to a big insurance company?
You know, we're hopeful that we really think that the transaction is the critical part of the overall engagement. When you think about the amount of insurance that transacts globally on an annual basis, and you think about, especially in our neck of the woods, which is like, you know, $25,000 annual premium, you know, kind of like client relationships and higher. So really, you know, it's meaningful businesses in the U.S. economy. When you think about that, you know, we get really excited about the opportunity to build a platform that, you know, that could be agnostic. So really bring together, you know, when I think about even about my startup community work or running an association or working for the governor, I've always sat at a table where I've had the mindset of like collaboration and the power of exponential thinking is always better than forging something by yourself. And that's fully injected in everything we do at Highwing. And so long-term, you know, I really hope we can be that meeting place, that water trough for the industry, where we're able to bring together a large portfolio of brokers and bring together a large portfolio portfolio of carriers and improve the lives for the insured. And, you know, I look out and I hope that we can be, you know, a Vertafore-like company in Denver and be one of the, you know, one of the core pillars of our industry.
How about the short term? What do you foresee 2021? I mean, is this going to be a great year for everybody? Is this going to be a mediocre year? What's Eric's forecast?
You know, I think we're still in the throes of the unknown chips of the year full, you know, kind of turning over.
Okay.
You know, I think, you know, I've been really actively involved in a lot of the recovery work here at a local level. Okay. And it's like, you know, there's effectively like almost two barbells of the pandemic. There's the part of the economies or the industries or the groups that are doing really well, having record years. You know, insurance happens to be one of those, especially with kind of rate increase plus kind of organic growth increases. You see a lot of brokerage firms and insurance companies posting really impressive performance in 2020, early 2021. And then on the other side of that, you've got service industries, whether it's retail or whether it's hospitality or whether it's our restaurant industry, whether, I mean, and they're in really dire straits and not even looking at some of the things that are happening in commercial real estate, things like that. So, you know, I think the most, where I have most of my thinking centered as it relates to 2021, I've gone to the year and said, you know, how can we really bring equality to the crisis? Mm-hmm. Like, how can those who are doing really well do more to help those who are really struggling? I think right now there's still a bifurcation in our economy and in our communities of the haves and have-nots. And I just think if there's anything that happens really powerful in 2021, I hope there's just that continued focus that the haves extend that hand and extend that olive branch to those that are struggling, and we pull them up. And I think Colorado is uniquely situated to do that. We've got a lot of programs in flight. The governor and the legislature has been kind in passing our own local, response and kind of funding activities around that. Nationally, it seems like we're on the edge of another stimulus, push. There's just lots of things that are in the ether that I think are all contributors to the recovery. I think the most important thing is that I always say that, you know, everything starts in your house, and then it goes to your neighborhood, and then it goes to your city, and then it goes to your state. And I think that if everyone starts in their house and helps their neighbors get back on their feet, and all those neighbors start to help the cities that we're in, help retail, you know, help our restaurant industry, help our service economy, help those that are really having a hard time. And then we can worry about what the state can do to kind of put on some, you know, jet fuel to bring us all up. I think it's going to be positive. But, you know, I think 2021 is still the story of, it's going to take some time to repair some of the damage that's happened from the pandemic. And like I said, I'm looking for those awesome stories of Coloradans helping Coloradans to bring us all back up to level.
Well, I can tell you how I'm helping. I've gone to a bar or a restaurant almost every single night since they opened back up. I personally, I don't know about you, but yeah, I really missed that. Just be taking my wife out to dinner, meeting my buddies for happy hour. I'm a very social being just like you. And so, you know, and I love my wife dearly, but I prefer not to see only her for 47 days straight. So I like to get out and see other people. I think what we come off of, I can't remember what week things kind of started to open back up slowly. I think I've been in a restaurant or a bar almost every day since then. Cause I need to, not only because I want to be out and I'm a social person, but yeah, I feel bad for them and I do want to contribute. I do want to be there spending my money, you know, to your point. So.
It takes all of us. And so I think if we can all just continue to encourage that, I try to do my part as well. It's being back in the office and going to restaurants and like being part of the community, I think it's really, really powerful, more powerful than we know. But yeah, anything we can encourage to do, that's great.
And throw out some extra tips if you can, because a lot of these waitresses and waiters and folks, I mean, they've been out of work, they've been struggling. And so I've been throwing out some pretty large tips myself lately as well.
I love it.
What do you think about, what's the future of remote work with this whole pandemic thing? And maybe you can tie it into what you guys plan on doing as well there at High Wing. But beyond High Wing, what do you think is going to happen globally with remote work? What are your thoughts there?
Yeah, I think we're all feeling that, you know, the cat's out of the bag, that as it relates to remote work. I think that, you know, as an economy and as industries, we were leaning into it going into 2020. leaning into it, meaning like flexible work programs, stay at home, once a week, work from home, type of environments. I mean, companies were getting more attuned to it just to be able to create a benefit environment that was flexible for working families, to be able to just be really very contributive to the office. And I think, obviously the pandemic ripped the cover off that. I mean, it's like, now we're there. Going back, I think it's going to be really hard. I've seen two things in our business. I mean, I was a skeptic. I've always been a person that's like managed by walking around. Like I love, being involved in the side discussion, sitting into a meeting, like checking up on, activities that are happening. I've always been taught and kind of learned, thinking of management by walking around strategy. And Zooming, like that is so different. Like you can't manage by Zooming around. You can't just pop into a meeting or, you have to plan or schedule something. And so I've learned two things. I think one is, this isn't going anywhere. I think it's going to be a very slow return to what was, kind of full capacity offices. And I don't know if we ever have full capacity offices. I think the companies are realizing that they can be highly productive and highly successful, providing a much more flexible work environment. And so I think as companies, we've all got to figure out what our version of that is, but the companies that try to pull it away, I don't think that's going to work in a good fashion for, across industries. The second thing, it was so interesting when I thought, about even Denver and, we were kind of going into 2020 in a really big space squeeze, there was some unfinished buildings in Rhino and, people started, investing deeply in some of the work in Golden Triangle, and there's a massive project, along the river, River Mile, and like, build, because, whether it's tech or oil and gas or aerospace, everyone was coming to town and eating up space.
Yep.
I think one of the silver linings here is that we can still continue that same velocity of growth, but we've got a nice little like pause in space for a while. Like, I think you're going to see a lot of companies reduce their space, and that space is going to be filled with the same growing influx of, HQ2s and migrations here, and companies set up shop in Colorado and companies growing. And so I just think it gives Denver kind of a nice chance to catch its breath from a commercial real estate perspective. It's not positive for some of the new build work, but I think we're going to kind of go down and go strongly back up in the commercial space. But I think, leading a remote team is a very different skill set than leading a team in person every day. And I think it requires an entirely new level of skills that, I can tell you, I work at, and I'm not a pro at by any means every day, but, I think we all strive to get better at it. But, I think really valuing asynchronous communication, really valuing documenting things that are happening in the company, really valuing, creating small digital wins, throughout the team, and building time and space in the week to be able to get together and do those things and try to bring some of that human interaction to a digital world. Like, it just takes an entirely different discipline and kind of skill set and thinking around that work. And I think you're going to see a lot of companies really, really thrive. And in our world, I think our engineering team will be remote, and we've had a lot of success growing our team in and outside of Colorado. We've got associates in Oregon, in Indiana, and Boston. And so we're bullish on being able to kind of use the U.S. as our palette to build our engineering and product team. Mm-hmm. But I do think having some semblance of an HQ with sales and client support and kind of that congenial energy that comes from a sales-driven culture, that's in our future. And I think when we have the chance to get back in August, September, October this year, we'll be excited to jump back into a neighborhood and do that.
Very good. I appreciate your thoughts on that. As we move towards wrap up, I'd like to ask you just some personal questions, a little bit about yourself, and get some advice for the listeners. First, you've done so much as an entrepreneur and as a business leader and an executive. What's one of the darkest moments you've had professionally that you might want to share with the listeners today, and maybe kind of walk into what you learned from it?
It's so funny that you use the word dark. I'm an optimist, and it's hard as an entrepreneur and for me not to live in a world of optimism. There's a quote that I have hanging on my windshield that I look at daily. And the quote is that pessimism is not an option because the human mind simply doesn't have enough knowledge. Like if we, like for me, I've always thought that like,
I like it.
Even in the darkest of times, the most challenging of times, I'm lacking knowledge. I don't know what could happen. I don't know what's going to flip over. I don't know what's going to happen in the industry. I don't know what's going to happen in my company. I don't know what's going to happen to my investors. Like there's so many unknowns every day when you're building a company that when you find dark moments, I just think you're giving into pessimism when you don't have the full knowledge of the world around you because it's ever evolving and ever changing. And so dark is really hard. I mean, like, you know, there were moments in my career where, you know, I've made, you know, less money for periods of time, which, you know, I think on a personal level, like you get stressed out when you have built a lifestyle and you have to kind of back it down. But like, I wasn't any less happy. I was doing less, but I was like same. And so, you know, I feel like, you know, part of the entrepreneurial like journey is to, you know, just find the goodness and optimism in the thing. Because entrepreneurship can be a really cold, dark place if you're not optimistic, because right. 9 out of 10 times, things never go your way. It's only the 10th time they go your way and you get to celebrate it for a second. But I think one of the darkest thing for me right now, I've really, really had a hard time with the mental health issues and pandemic in our startup ecosystem. Yep. In our, I would just say broadly in our business ecosystem, this year more than ever, I've had multiple encounters with mental health issues from, you know, anxiety to depression to, you know, most recently some founders that have made the decision to end their own life. And, you know, being a founder and being in those situations, it's so hard for me to like go to those places. But I also understand that, you know, being an entrepreneur and building companies or doing that work, it does require handling a lot of stress. And it makes me really sad to see when those things end up in those scenarios. So that's the part that, you know, I haven't figured out a solve there in terms of like how I can help other than being available for founders on an ongoing basis, you know,
right.
As those situations. But it's this year has been really hard and it's brought out more of that than ever, because I just think you not only have, you know, the pandemic, you have an economic crisis, a health crisis, a political crisis, there's layered crises that are contributing to it. And it's just allowed mental health to rear its ugly head. And it's been really painful to watch.
You know, I was thinking of an example. I mean, can you imagine being, let's call it a 40-year-old entrepreneur sitting in their apartment, not married, no kids. They live in a state where they don't have any family nearby. Their business is crashing because of the pandemic, and they're trapped in their home and can't go to a restaurant or a bar or to the gym or anywhere. That is a scary thing. And
that's exactly what's happening. That's the exact scenario.
Yeah.
And it's scary. Humans are built to withstand a lot, but I think humanity has its limits. And, the brain is the most powerful thing that we have in our bodies. And it can get on the wrong track. And, you know, I've got an eye out for it. I've been blessed to be able to contribute and help some folks that have had a hard time this year in that arena. But at the same time, you know, I've missed some cues, and when you miss cues and people disappear from your life, it's devastating. And you can ask yourself, like, why didn't I see that? Why couldn't I have been part of that? Why couldn't I have picked the phone one more time? And that's really hard.
Those are two big pieces of advice for the listeners today on this episode. Number one, if you sense anything might be wrong, ask the question, dig in. And if you are needing help, reach out, right? Like reach out to another entrepreneur, a fellow co-founder, call Riderflex. You can call me anytime you want to, but reach out to somebody and talk to them, right? And I think that's encouraging. The good news is, as we record this on February 4th, 2021, things are opening up a little bit and people can get out a little bit in Colorado. So that's the good news. I know we're almost out of time. Two final questions. If you could call the young 21-year-old Eric and tell him anything today based on what you know now, what would that be?
Relax. it's so funny. I help the co-chairman of a leadership organization, and we've got a lot of aspiring 20, 30-year-olds that we work with in some of our programs. And, I've looked at, your 20s as a time to kind of put your relationships in the ground, and your 30s to really understand the ones you want to carry with you, and your 40s to really triple down on the ones that are important, and your 50s to enjoy the awesome relationships you've been able to carry and refine over the course of kind of 3 decades. And, I just think that my 20-year-old self, probably wanted things to happen way too fast. I probably was disappointed that I didn't achieve what I wanted to achieve in short periods of time. And I would say relax. And the other thing I would say is that, I just think that, do anything. Like, I just think that in your 20s, looking back, I was lucky that I was able to work in some early stage companies and work for some really great founders. But when I look at my 20s, I gave 100% of my 20s to founders that I was building their dream. I was creating value for their equity. I was building, their story. And I just encourage entrepreneurs to be cognizant of it, to bet on themselves earlier. I wouldn't take anything back. But I just think that being more confident in your own ability to go build a business by yourself or with a great co-founder, a great group of people, I think the earlier you can come to grips with that, the more exciting it's going to be an entrepreneur. So much to me.
Final question for you, Eric. If you could put your core purpose into a sentence, or at least what your core purpose is today at this stage in life, what would that sound like?
I live to bring out the best in humans, period. And so whatever they are in their life, whatever they want to be in their life, like if I have the opportunity to bring them a connection, give them a piece of advice, invest in them, and just sponsor them. My purpose is to allow everyone that I work with to be the best version of themselves. And I hope that I can just continue to drive on every ounce of capacity to give as much as I can give.
Excellent. Eric, thank you so much for being on the RiderFlex podcast and sharing your story. I really appreciate it.
Steve, thank you. You're running a really great business in Colorado. I was lucky to have you and your team here, and really excited to see with all the growth, development, and continued innovation in your industry, and really Colorado being the laboratory for a lot of that work. It's really cool to see what you've been able to build and the impact you're having in growing it. So thank you.
Thank you, sir. If you think today's tip or guest interview can help someone you know, please share this with them. If you've enjoyed today's episode, please subscribe to our channel and hit the like button. The RiderFlex podcast features entrepreneurs, business executives, and the stories behind how they got there, as well as daily tips on career advice and job interviewing. You can visit RiderFlex.com to learn more about us and get information and pricing on the recruiting and consulting services we provide. Thanks so much for listening, and have a great day.